Okay, the shir is going to be Le'uli Nishmas Ezra ben Mazal. Okay, here's the question. We're just going to throw out a question before we start the shir. You got the following situation. You have a situation which is a Goyish man who gets a Jewish girl, and he takes her into the house and he forces her to live with him. Right? He's a ma'ane. Of course she's not doing anything wrong because her life's in danger. She has no choice. She's stuck. And one day the rabbi of the community finds out that this man, this Gentile man, because of his business dealings, somebody's after his life. Right? So the rabbi, in the back of his mind, is saying to himself, listen, I'm not involved here. I don't want to know anything what's going on here. But worst comes to worst, take a look. This woman who unfortunately is being over all these isurim, you know, she'll be free. She'll be off the hook. So the rabbi says, you know, I feel I have an obligation to save this man. Because how can this terrible deed happen to this man? So the rabbi goes, and the rabbi tells the woman, the Jewish woman, I want you to know that there's somebody after your husband's life. And now the Jewish woman, right, let's go a step further, who thinks about it, and every day she knows she's doing the wrong thing, but she has no choice, goes, and she approaches her husband and says, I want you to know, so-and-so's after your life. And she saves him. So let's think about it. Till now, she was living bainus. But now, she's barotzen, right? Now it's truly barotzen because she could have gotten out of the problem, and now she's stuck.
Wow. Right?
So what's the question? Purim. Let's think about the story of Purim. What do you have? Bigson and Seres.
What?
They plot to kill who? They plot to kill Achashverosh. There's a Jewish woman, her name is Esther. Who's she living with? She's living with Achashverosh. Why is she not doing anything wrong, right? Like the Gemara says, Pam Ba'oinis, right? Brilliant question. It's a brilliant question. Oinis Rosen, right? So what is he? So Mordechai, who's a member of Sanhedrin, hears about this, and what's the first thing he does? He says, let me go to, quick, I gotta go to the Jewish girl, to Esther, and tell her this information. Goes into Esther, says this information. What's the next thing that happens? She, who till now was Ba'onis, now becomes a Rotzayn by going to Achashverosh and saving his life. What is shaking? Is that a question? I saw this question for the first time today. I never saw this statement beforehand. I think this question is tremendous. A tremendous question. I'm not as happy with the answer as I am with the question. I think
the question is unbelievable.
I should probably leave you with the question. We'll be better off. I thought this question was just a remarkable question. He tried to go back and forth and give all kind of answers, and he struggled with the question. To me, it's mind-boggling that I never saw this question. And just to make this question, how are you? Baruch Hashem. To make the question so much stronger, the Gemara says at the end of in Maseches Megillah, the Gemara says, "Bechashe avadati avadati." What does she say to Mordechai? He says, "Till now, goodbye. Why goodbye? Till now, I went ba'inis. Now I'm going baratzim. So now I'm going to become usa, my husband." Mordechai. If you think about it, how does this all add up? It's just a remarkable question. The only parents he said that, I don't know that it was half decent, again, it's a very difficult question, was that...
Why did he consider it on response?
What?
He's going after herself, she's going for kindness.
No, but the act that time of going... No, the main part is... Well, again, we'll say it over after the shiur what the main part of the question was, because now really we're a few minutes into this question. But afterwards, I'll tell you over Bezat Hashem right after the shiur. I'll tell you what the question was. But the answer which he gave, I thought that was a fairly good answer. He said as follows. He said we have a concept that in many circles by the kings this was a concept, and you learn Sanhedrin, the sugi of Melech, it was by the Jewish. You know, people also, this concept existed, that a king that dies, his son gets Yerusha, gets all the parents Yerusha, and even gets Yerusha on the king's wife. So the new king automatically acquires the old king's wives.
So were there any children?
Huh? I don't know. He doesn't. Well, Vayavet is not a good example because Vayavet is from Esther and Ahasuerus. I don't know if it meant her own child. I'm not sure. But he said at the end, he says that maybe he knew that what's going to happen is that the son of Ahasuerus, Chinu, would get her anyway. So it's not going to get her out of the problem. That's possibly what he says is the answer. If anybody has any thoughts, if anybody has any interesting answers, let me know, because I just found the question so fascinating. You know, I've seen so many Vatayas on the Megillah, and then to see like a new concept of this book. I'll just tell you one other thing which I saw, which also found fascinating. The Maloy Haroyim was Rabbi Aryeh Leib Tzin. I don't know if you realize, whenever you go into many places, you'll see foreign princes from Rabbi Aryeh Leib Tzin. He wrote on it, if you've been to Warsaw, to his Matseva, he wrote on the Matseva that anyone that ever has a problem should print my Sefer, and I'll go up to the Beis Shamal. Yes, there's many, many forms. So he wrote a Sefer Maloy Haroyim, and the Sefer Maloy Haroyim, he asked the following question. It says in the Megillah, V'hakorev Eilav, Kashna, Shesa, Admosa, Sashish, Meret, Kashna, Shesa, Admosa, no, it says, the next pasuk. For after shortly later, but it's just the interesting chiddush that he comes out with it. He says that there's zeisa ve'avakta, right? He wants to know, if you take a look at that pasuk well, all the vods are out of place, and he wants to say at the end that the ve'avakta was the actual name, ve'charkas was the name. The name had the vod in it. That's what he wants to say. And he wants to say the reason why at the end of the pasuk there it has to say Shiva Sarita Yamelech, the seven, is to tell us that don't think that the two that's written with a vav, that some of them had two names. Which is very difficult to imagine that chat, by the way, because the Chassam Sofer and the Mezi Yehuda both write that the concept of one person having two names is very recent, didn't exist historically. So to say that they had to say seven to inform us that Gobi and Megillah had two names as one is a bit of a difficult concept to imagine. But those are the two chidushim. But the first question, anybody comes up with a good answer, please let me know. Okay. So anyway, so we're going to go Be'ezus Hashem in the next 2 weeks. We're going to focus on these Ma'ar Mekoymus, Be'ezus Hashem. So, you know, next week, just select these, this is what we're going to have. It's going to be this shir, and Be'ezus Hashem Shushan Purim at night will have a shir. Okay. Here we go. The question is as follows, and it's an extremely important subject. You hire a worker, the worker does a job for you, what happens? He's in the middle of putting in I'll tell you a story that happened in my house. When I was building my house, my wife found a beautiful chandelier. Beautiful chandelier. It was a very beautiful chandelier. That's how I'll stop the story. And it was very heavy. And as the guy was putting it in, I was very nervous, and I was watching him put it up, and he kept on saying, don't watch. I was wondering why. But it didn't take too long. I found out very quickly why. As he was holding the chandelier up to the center of the room, and in the middle, suddenly I heard such a crash that still resonates in my ear. The whole thing, you know, and a glass chandelier, many pieces of crystal, when it falls from 10 feet high, I don't have to tell you what that's going to look like. It's not very, very pleasant. So the only thing left to do is to take a broom and sweep it up. That was the end of the story. So what's the story? Does he have to reimburse me for that or not? And all, you know, Baruch Hashem, all in business, all kinds of different situations. Very often, you hire a worker, and the worker starts to do a job, and before you turn around, he kills it for you. Now, Bezrat Hashem, the next two shiurim, this year and the next year, and possibly one after, the discussion is going to be, like you see you don't have it on the front page, it's the artisan. The artisan means the laborer, right?
Not a salesman.
And then, after I conclude that, I want to go into other people that mess up, but not with like we call them Demasa Yadayim, but rather they mess up, the attorney gives you bad legal advice and you lose money. Or beyond the attorney giving you bad legal advice, your tax advisor advises you terribly. Or, the classic question, which today everybody has to deal with, your stockbroker gave you bad advice. Right? A lot of cases today, if anybody follows the news today, all the people that lost money in the last 2 years, there are all kind of advertisements where they're advertising that call us and we'll recover your money that you lost to you. Now, what we're going to have to do is, in order to understand this subject, is to first start really, really from the beginning. Go through the Gemara, see the different issues that are in the Gemara, and then once we see that, we can say, okay, let's do some application to the modern day halacha. So what we're going to do today is first get the subject clear. Go ahead.
This is talking about legal, not, I mean,
right. Medical malpractice is category. Slightly different. I'll tell you why it's in a totally different category. I would say one of the only areas that I don't deal with in Dina Torah is medical malpractice. Why is that? Because every time there's an issue of a malpractice case, they say the first question that we ask at the Bezdin is, will the insurance company honor the course of arbitration? And just about every case, there's an email sent off to the insurance company, and they send us back and they say no. This, the ruling for us to reimburse has to be from court. So medical malpractice just about never comes to Bezdin. So it's a bit of a different case when you have medical malpractice, because there's insurance. There's a question. If something gets messed up, is it on condition that since you have insurance, you're willing to let the insurance reimburse? You know, insurance runs into a bit of a different area. But I guess medical malpractice in the olden days would be a more specific question. Now, the most classic case that you deal with, and from this we're going to see the most halakhot, is from the shochet. Right? The shochet that slaughters, and in the middle he messed up. Okay, now we'll read this Gemara well, but we're going to learn a lot of halakhas from this one specific subject. Okay? So take a look, the first page of the Marei Mekamot is the Gemara in Bava Kama. Ah, Salim, how are you? So it says as follows, we're going to go five lines up five lines up from the first wide lines, not the second one. It's about a third of the way down into the page. Amar Shmuel tells us the following statement. He says as follows: Tabach umen shekilkel, a butcher who goes to slaughter, and you take your animal to him, and he slaughters it, and he was mekalkel, he ruined the animal. You got no animal now, it's finished. The animal cost originally $2,000. They slaughtered it, and what happened? He killed it. He messed up. So what's the halacha? Does he have to reimburse his boss? Chayav l'shalem, he has to reimburse his boss. Okay, so far sounds pretty good from our chandelier. The worker kills it, the worker breaks it, he has to reimburse his balabos. Now the Gemara says three possible reasons. Very interesting, three definitions that the Gemara gives, and I want to focus on them for a few moments, because that will be able to give us an insight later when we have to analyze cases. Number one, you should know, what do you know firstly about the worker? Mazikhu, he's a mazik. Number two, what is he? Pesheyahu, he's a pesheya. Number three, Nasiko Eimeloi Shchoitli Mikan V'Shochemloi Mikan. It's like you told him, please do the Maisha Shchit on one side, and where do you do it? On the other side. You know, it's not in the exact same place. All right, now, it's interesting the Gemara felt it necessary to give us three reasons, but as we'll go through the subject, we'll realize that every one of the three reasons was worthwhile, and from every one of the three reasons, we're going to learn something. So that's extremely important that the Gemara gave us three reasons why he has to pay. All right, good? Now the Gemara says as follows. So the Gemara says, Lomalei Lameima Mazaku Pesheyahu. The Gemara doesn't talk about all three, the Gemara talks about the first two. Why does it have to say that number one he's a mazik and number two he's a fesheya? So the Gemara answers: Yama mazikhu. If he only said that he's a mazik, hava mina, I would think, hani mili heicha de ka'ovah b'schar. That's only that what he's doing b'schar. What does it mean b'schar? Because he's getting paid. Aval heicha de ka'ovah b'chinam. But if he's doing the job for free, loy, there would be a whole different halacha. Kamashu, and therefore, what does he tell me? Pesheyahu, that is a pesheya. Now, how do those words make any sense? I mean, since he's getting paid, so therefore, take one of my requirements. Right there. Okay. What is the mataki pesheya? How does that tell me that only when he's getting paid? So take a look at Rashi, the first page in the Maamar Kaimah. Take a look at the Rashi. This is an extremely important Rashi. Now, firstly, Rashi says Tabach umen shekil kolchayim. Rashi says, we're talking about the expert. How about if the guy that does the work is not an expert? What would you say? Does he have to reimburse the balabas? Token.
Maybe not. Why?
You knew he was an expert.
Okay. So very good. So Alan, excellent. The Sman Shulchan Aruch writes that when you go to the worker says to you, he says, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm not an expert. It's at your own risk. So the Sman says, then you accept it. So we won't discuss yet that case. When the worker says right away up front that I want you to know, I don't know what I'm not an expert, so fine. Then you're not covered by, you don't have that protection. But how about if he didn't say anything to you? Then you're far better off being if he's an uman, right, then it would seem to be his potter. Because if he's not an uman, number one, what do you say? He is a hosheya, right? That's number one. Number two, if you take a look in the Shulchan Aruch, the Shach, the Sma rather, has a quote on the Mechaber. And he says as follows. He says that if he's an uman, he writes, then it's mazloch goram. If a guy is an expert, a guy knows what he's doing. So due to the fact that the guy knows what he's doing, so how come, why do you end up on an animal that's not kosher? So the answer is because your mazal caused that it should be no good. But if you took a guy that didn't know what he was doing in the first place, so you had no mazal to make it go in the right way in the first place. So that's a whole different case, right? You understand? So those are the two points that you have to realize that we refer specifically to a woman. We're talking about a professor.
That's not the sign that says, you know, any animal he's bringing is such an owner.
Well, you can make any condition you want.
But what I'm saying is, even if they come with that condition, could they come right if you make the mistake?
100%. You can make conditions. So I'll tell you a very interesting thing. We once had a fascinating case. We once had a case. Yes, it depends really what's written. We had a case one time that there was a guy got married. And when he got married, he bought himself 10 shirts. And each shirt spent $150 on. So I don't know what this guy was thinking, but this is what this guy decided to do. I'm sure he could have found shirts for a fraction of the price, but this is what this fellow did. He went and put this as one of the questions of the week. And it happened to be very interesting. Maybe you can send it out for Shabbos questions. It was a fascinating case. The guy went and he said, on the back of this story happened in Lakewood. And Lakewood, there was a certain cleaner that he wanted to get the guys right away when they got married. That's when you have to get the customer. Because, when they get married, they have a few extra dollars. And once you get them the first time, then you have them. So he had an incentive. The incentive was that the first month any couple is married, they do all cleaning for free. Right? Pretty fair incentive. So everybody in Lakewood would run to this cleaner for the first week. And what happened? Second week, third week, and once you had him, he had you as a customer, you stayed by him. He was very happy to do so. So he took one. This guy just got married, had his $1,050 shirt, and the machine left like two holes right above the pocket, two nice holes, and all 10 shirts suddenly came back with two holes. All right, not wearable. $1,500 of damage. I shouldn't say so quickly. $1,500 of damage because when you wear a shirt the second time, it doesn't have the same. Once you open the package, it's like a car when you drive it out. What's that? We're in here, and there's a tremendous decrease in value very quickly. So I'm not going to discuss exactly what the value of the shirt was. That's for another time. On the back of the ticket, the guy wrote as follows. He wrote, we are responsible for all items cleaned up to 10 times the value of your cleaning bill. That's what it said on the back of the ticket. In other words, if you come in and you clean a suit, and the charge of cleaning the suit is $8, he's responsible for up to $80 of damage. So the guy argues, I'm responsible for up to 10 times the cleaning bill. What was the cleaning bill?
Zero.
I'm not responsible. Is that condition valid or not? What would you say? Huh?
This is like when they give you a free shipping, they charge you for the shipping and then they give you the discount. So
right.
You charge them for whatever.
You're saying there was a charge, but the charge became zero, right? There was a charge. I don't know. The Bezin that this case happens to have gone through ruled that the guy has to pay for the full amount because the full amount of the shirt, whatever the full amount is, the shirt, once you open the package, it's not worth $150 anymore. The reasoning behind this tag-din was as follows. The concept of a person making a condition, the condition is for expected damages, which is and it's going to be interesting because it's really going to go into the subject, which is similar to Geneva, Aveda, the expected damages that could go wrong when a person has a job to watch your shirt, because he very likely became a shomer, but it did not cover him being a mazik or a pesheh. When you take a person's shirt and you give it back with such gross negligence, no cleaner can give back a shirt with two holes on top of every single pocket, that the condition did not cover. That happens to have been the ruling of this Bezdin. All right, by the time we finish the sugi, everybody will come back and we'll talk about this question again. But just, even when you make conditions, you have to know what is covered by the condition and what is not covered by the condition. I just want to point that out. But yes, clearly speaking, if you make a condition that you're not hired, there should be such concept. All right, but especially in this right, Vayam Mumcha or not. Now, as we go to the subject, another thing which is going to be very interesting, who's a Mumcha and who's not a Mumcha? How do you determine an expert? That's a very important question. Let's determine an expert. And the other question which I want to ask you is, whose obligation is it to prove that they are or they aren't an expert? In other words, you go and I gave you my item and you damaged it. And after you damaged it, what happens? You come back, I say to you, okay, pay. So you say, excuse me, I'm pot, I did it for free, and I am a woman. Really, you're an expert? Prove it. So, is it my obligation to prove you're not an expert, or is it your obligation to prove you are an expert? That's a very important question, which, Be'ezrat Hashem, by the time we're through the subject, we will answer all of those questions, Be'ezrat Hashem. Okay, now let's just read the Rashi, what the Rashi tells us on Mazaku Feisheyahu. Rashi says as follows. Mazik chayv ointzin. Every mazik is chayv and ointzin. The other mu'ud la'olam, because a person is a mu'ud forever. Bein shogig, bein mezik, medikor le mazik lechayv ba'oinis. It comes to be mechayv in oinis. Now, I just want to introduce you to two extremely important concepts that we're going to deal with in this subject. Two very important concepts, and we're going to discuss the different rishonim, how they approach each of these questions. When I damage you, there's two ways I can be chayv. Let's talk about I'm your shayfet, right? And I'm in the middle of slaughtering your animal. So I have two obligations to you if I damage your animal. What are the two? Who can tell me of why I'm obligated to pay you? What possibly can you call me when I damage you? One, mazik, excellent, and that will go. That's two shaymer, excellent. Okay, Ezra got both of the possibilities. Possibility number one is mazik. What does mazik mean? Other mu'ud la'olam. If I damage another person, I have to pay. What's the second possibility? Shomer. Why shomer? Because of shomer tocha. It's just an interesting term. The Gemara is going to say what you said, but I just want to think about it for a few seconds. Why are you a shomer? I mean, I can see it when I give you an item, you know, to put in an article of plumbing, so you take it into your possession and do whatever you do. Here, I bring you the animal, I'm holding it, you're shoker. So is the bowl of Eloi? It's a very important question to think about one by one. But you're right, 100%, the answer is shomer. Now, what type of shomer?
The
Well, the Gemara is going to say on the shoketer is shomer sakat. Exactly what the Gemara says, correct. So the Gemara extends, and the Gemara says that by anything which if I'm paying you, then you become a shomer sakat. Now shomer sakat gives you which chiyurim? Levin Aveda. All right, so there's two possibilities. You can either be chayav al shomer sakat or Adam Yid Le'aylam. Let's talk Adam Yid Le'aylam for a second. Mazik, which obligations does that give you? Adam Mu'ud Le'aylam. Zahavat Ones. Ones.
Well, depends what kind of
book. So now we're talking. Onus would also be an obligation if we're talking about because of mazik, right? But now the question is, what type of onus? What are the possibilities in onus? Onus gemur and onus not gemur. Who told you such a possibility? The Gemara doesn't say that. In other mood loyalum, the Gemara doesn't make it. Taisus says that. Taisus says the Gemara can say it because the Ramban is going to disagree with this Taisus. So there's three Gemaras two in Bava Kama, one Hamariach, one here, and one in Bava Metzia. But there's no, I don't believe in Gemara. It's Tosfot, and there's a disagreement between Tosfot and between the Ramban. Okay, so now let's just try to determine these concepts a bit more. All right, if we can, let's just, now there's another thing which I want you to realize. If the person who does the Shechita becomes a Shai Mitzvah, his obligation to slaughter that animal and protect it become greater. Because when I pay you to work with my item, I'm paying you also to watch it. So even though in the regular, and what am I paying you for? I'm paying you to take my item and bring it back to me as a better item. And if you ruin my item, you didn't do your job. So your obligations as a Shem Sachar becomes an even greater obligation, and the Chiyubim as the Shem Sachar becomes greater. You hear? Now let's read the Rashi very, very well, and we'll see both of these points reflected in this Rashi. Rashi says, the Ka'avad B'tzkar, a person is working B'tzkar, the Mazik Chayiv B'Oinsim. If you're a Mazik, you're Chayiv in Oinis. By the way, Rashi does not define which type of Oinis. The Adamud L'Oilam, Ben Shoyim, Ben Mezit. Now, let's take a look at the Rashi as he continues to speak now. Shmamino comes to tell us, the Bach changes the word, that he's getting paid for his job. So he's not just a mazik, he's getting paid. The Gamashmalon de Peshehu, the Lechoshev Le Oinis El Pshia. We won't even call you an Oinis, we'll rather call you a Pshia. Which means, if you're slaughtering the animal and suddenly the animal jumps, so what happens when it jumps? What can go wrong? What happens?
Damage.
But why is there damage? Why is it not kosher? Huh? You cut him wrong. How can you cut it wrong? Did he start or?
She,
or grandma, right? What are the five sulam and hilchos shechita? What five rules do you have to have when you do shechita? Right? Number one? Shia. What does that mean, Shia?
Delay.
You can't delay. How long can't you delay? That's according to the Mechaber. According to the Ramah, even a second. Right? So that's going to be very interesting. What's number two? Drisa. What does Drisa mean? Can't press down. If it jumps, you might press down. What's the other one? Hagrama. What does Hagrama mean?
Coming from the back.
Moving outside of the specified area of Shechita, right? Above the
the
Shipikova, correct, or the Chitin, or Tabas HaGdola. Depends how, it's all the same. I just said three things, which is the exact same term. Or what? Slaughtering? Too low. You're going into the Keres, you're going too low. There's one opinion, by the way, which Rashi brings in later in this page, that when you do the Shechita, you have to stay within one ring. You can't go from, anybody familiar how a tunnel looks?
Yeah.
It's a bunch of rings, which is connected, it's a cosmic ring connected by tissue, and above it is one big ring which is known as Tabasik, the Shipikov, it's like the helmet, right? Where it goes there. But one day we can bring one in. If you guys want to do a study, I can bring in the animal, we can go through it. It's absolutely fascinating, by the way, if you want to do it. Okay, no, it is. I went to Ravelsky many times. He took a whole animal and he dissected it from top to bottom. Beautifully, we learned daily traces and cool, and it was just really something fascinating to watch. You can show just about everything which is mentioned in all of Hilchos Shechita traces. You can see on them. It's really, really, really fascinating. Okay, so now what he says is, you're Shom Sachar. So therefore, what was your obligation? Be very, very careful to make it kosher. So therefore, you should have tied it better. If it jumps, now if you weren't a Shom Sachar and it jumps, what can I do? Right? I'm an oinus. But due to the fact that you should have watched better, right? So therefore, you're going
to have... man, you're supposed to know all the different variations that might go wrong.
Good, excellent. Or I'll add to what you're saying, I'll just say it from a different angle. As an uman, you will tie it down in a way where we don't have to assume you didn't do it properly. I can say this in both ways. Number one, as an uman, you have a greater obligation because you know it can go wrong. And number two, as an uman, you're going to do it in a way where it's going to be done correctly. So therefore, we don't have to say there's any level of shia. Okay, but now I want to approach Ezra's point. We'll go back for a few moments in the direction you were going. Well, one second. So it turns out from this Rashi, you should prove that an oinus gomer is patur. Right? because we're only discussing you're obligated. Why? Because you got paid, so therefore you have an obligation to watch it, so you are a shomer. But if you did not have an obligation to watch it, so then you would be patur. I owe the mu'ud lo'imam, mazik, what happened to that? So there are two possible explanations. One is the explanation of Tosfot, and one is the explanation of the Ramban. And I want you guys to listen to this, because this is the key to this sugi. Alright? The Ramban, the Tosfot says, if you take a look, you want to see where it is, turn over to the next page. To the next page. And on the next page it says as follows. Listen to this. Alright? It's Shmuel Omar. You see, Tosfot is Shmuel Omar. So Taisa says the concept of Adam Mu'ed Lo'olam is not a perfect concept. It doesn't work all the time. It's only when it's an Oinit She'enoi Gomer. Alright? That's what Taisa says. And Taisus now says the following words, because it's going to be important to define these words, what they actually mean. So Taisus says as follows. I want you to take a look at Tosfot Shmuel Oma. You see where the white lines are? Four lines up from that. V'niru l'dagdek. You see that? V'niru l'dagdek? V'niru l'dagdek. The Odom Hamazik, the Mr. the Oynis, the concept of Odom Hamazik, that's Patur, by an Oynis, it has to be what type of Oynis? Taisus defines. And Geneva. It has to be what? A real oinus. Geneva is more onate. On the other hand, Aveda is closer to Shia. So therefore, if you have an oinus that says Ke'en Geneva, so the Adma Mazik is going to be Patur. But if you have an oinus which is Ke'en Aveda, which is a Shia, the Adma Mazik will be Chayim. Alright? Shuken Geneva, Midatayu B'Shili Ha'umnem. Hamava Chavis. He gives the following example. A guy's a mover. And what happens while he's moving? He has barrels. He's moving from one place to the other. And there's typical breakage that you expect. There's nothing you can do about it. Does he have to pay? So it says it depends. If it's a Shemachinam, then what happens? Then he pays. A Shemachinam, then what happens? Then it's Patur. Shemachinam, what happens? He has to pay. So he says, whoa, not so quick, he says. If it's a Shemachinam, let him pay because of what? Osmanazik. So what if Taisus answer? No. Because the usual break is that you can't do anything to protect yourself from, and you expect it, and it's normal, that's already considered an onet, which is similar to geneva. But if he's negligent, then that's already an onet, which is similar to aveda. Oh, but if there's a shomer, then Tosfot says, then what? Then you have already a full obligation because you weren't shomer properly. You understand? Look how beautiful the subject is coming down. Now we're starting to understand. And Taisus at the end then goes into our subject of the tabak, of the butcher. When you're not getting paid, Tosfot says, so then you're not a shomer, you're only a shomer chinam. So you're patur because of the obligation of shomer. What can obligate you? Onet. But if it depends what type of onet. If it's onet which is similar to geneva, you're patur. So therefore what happens is, if it's going to jump, and you don't expect it to jump, so you're patur. You got it? But once you got paid for your job, now you have a full obligation. That's such a beautiful explanation of Taisus, and it really, really defines the subject very well. Now, the Ramban doesn't go for any of this. And the Ramban says, no, absolutely not, I totally disagree, the Ramban says. The Ramban says, Adam Mu'ed Lo'olam, you're an oinus, in all cases. Okay, so every case of a person that's mazik, you're mazik, you have to pay. Oynes gama, oynes she'ena gama, Ramban totally disagrees with Taisus. So wait, but what do we do? How come is it that the person is only obligated when he, by the animal that gets ruined, when he is a shomesacha? Right? Why isn't he should be obligated to every oynes? So the Ramban says one of the most brilliant chidushim. Listen just to the thought of the Ramban and you're going to see how beautiful it works. And then we'll take the whole subject after this. Now that you heard the Gemara, Rashi, Tosfot, and the Ramban and the explanation, we're going to start doing the application to every single possible case now that we have these rules. You know what the Ramban says? He says very simple. He says, what does it mean, Odom Mu'ed Lo'olam? What's the Odom Hamazik? What's a Mazik? What's the definition of the word mazik? A damager. The Ramban says, if you gave me permission and you asked me to work on your chayfas and your items, how can you call me a person that's dead? You say, wait a minute, I'm holy kashrut. Whatever I'm doing, I'm going with permission. And once I'm going with permission, you cannot call me an Adam HaMazik. So the Ramban says, well, I'm going to take Tosfos out of the picture. Tosfos, because of his problem, had to figure out that everybody in the world could be Adam HaMazik, but let me make levels in Adam HaMazik. That's what Tosfos did. The Ramban says, no, I'm very sorry, I'm not going to go in that direction at all. But the Ramban says, the direction I'm going to take is that if you pay me, I'm a shomer. If you don't pay me, I'm not a shomer. But why am I not an Adam HaMazik? Because I had the right to do what I was doing.
So shomer shinam, according to the Ramban, shomer shinam that he gave something to
right.
Him, and he breaks it?
And he breaks it, as long as it's not a pshias patur. That's it. Because from the obligation of shmirah, it's very weak. From the obligation of being a Adam HaMazik, you can't be, because I had permission. Adam HaMazik, by definition, doesn't make any sense if I had permission. You understand? That's there's one of the most fascinating Chazanish, which is written on the subject. He has a whole beautiful lumnus with the whole sugya of HaMazik as Ishtar B'tashmish HaMitas. He says, if he has a shus, how could he be Mazik? Right? That's the Chazanish has a beautiful discussion on this whole. There's many, you know the famous Namuka Yosef and the Rambam, if a wife is in the middle of washing dishes and she breaks one, if she has to pay her husband or not? Huh? What's that? Depends what kind of dishes they are. But
try to collect.
The Rambam says that there could be enough to pay. The Namuka Yosef says, because the problem is that Chazal are going to be Machai, your women won't do the dishes anymore, and it's going to be a problem for Dr. Shalom. But I think. Huh?
You'll
have to pay for the plate anyway. Yeah, you'll have to pay in a different way anyway.
Listen, you'll be doing the dishes.
You'll be doing the dishes, huh? I have to tell you, the Brisker of the Chayim Lebracha stayed every summer in a hotel. He went on to a vacation resort. The hotel he stayed at was by my grandmother, who should be, lived for many, many years. She's 98 years old, Kanai Nahara, and she's doing very well, Baruch Hashem. She has a bracha from the Brisker of. They stayed every summer by her. She would salt his chickens. He taught her how to salt chicken. And the Imayemets from Menachem Zema, there were a lot of great Gedolim. They were a very religious family. A lot of the great Gedolim stayed in their hotel because they knew that the kashrus was perfect. And what's that? It was called Villa Venice, was the name of the hotel. And it was out in a city called Krenica. That was a city. It was out in Poland, where the nice, the nice trees in the mountains, where it was very nice, the trees were there and everything was there. At the end of the year, every single year, the Brisker Rav would come to my great-grandfather, and he would say, listen, I was here for the summer, I want to pay my bill. He was paid some years through Yom HaNayron, by the way. He was paid some years through Hashanah Yom Kippur over there. They would say, look, it's time, I want to pay my bill. And my grandfather would always say, he says, listen, it's the honor to have the Brisker Rav here, I don't want any money. The Brisker Rav had a comment every time. He would say as follows. He says, for every service you receive in this world, there is a price to pay. And the cheapest way to pay is with money. That was his comment, So the bottom line is, you're right. You're going to pay regardless. So don't try to collect in any way. It's not going to work. That's the bottom line. But I think now we have a very, very clear understanding of the subject. And now we can start to approach the halachas. Now, I'm not going to go through all of the different, gemaras, because the next page is the famous Mishnah of the mover, right, who's shipping. On page 5, you'll see the Ramban. You look on the next page, is the Machne Ephraim, who basically explains everything that I just explained to you in a much more simpler way, okay? And now, let's take a look at the actual Shulchan Aruch, right? Let's see the actual halakha, and then Bezat Hashem, next week we can go far, far deeper into many of the applications. That's what we'll do, Bezat Hashem, this coming week. Okay. Alright, it'll be very nice because we'll start to... See, the truth is, from here we need to discuss many, many different subjects, which I'm not going to deal with them this week. But I'll just throw out, off the cuff, some of the most fascinating questions which we'll be dealing with next week. What's that? There is a disagreement between the Ramban and Tosfos how we came to our halakha, but the bottom line is we're always going to say the exact same thing. Because let's think about it. Either we're going to say that the guy is not an Olam Mu'ul Olam, why? Because he has permission, so you can't give him that obligation.
you know, we're going to let him do New York Shemitah, but if the Jew is going to make a move on it, that he would think if he agreed to it to let him do it, he would say no.
Well, there's always a risk. Anybody that you know, not every animal is going to turn out to be perfect.
You have the case in the Gemara of the cat that brings the wool to be dyed.
Right.
You want it red and they dye.
Right.
You know, that's mazik also.
Well, there, so the Gemara right here asked that question.
Mm-hmm.
And the Gemara says, why don't we learn from that case? So the Gemara says, sort of his response, he says that case is worse. Because that was, there he was intentional. You know, he was Mishana intentionally. So there he definitely has to pay. But here he didn't do anything wrong. See, it's not perfectly symmetrical, the two cases. You see, I told you, go back to our page and the Gemara asks you a question. The Gemara tells us, let's see here. You see where it says, Kuf Lamed Nun Siman. Two lines below that. He says that now, Mitzvoyle Eden Vitzavi Shocha Vitzavi Eden, Remeyle Menachle the Made Simmai, Hosam, Biyadayim Kolomine. So he says you can't compare the two cases, because there you did it Biyadayim, you went and you changed, right? But in our case, you didn't do it Biyadayim, so it's a very, very different case. Now, before we approach the halacha, I just want to throw out three fascinating questions. And I'm not going to have three, four fascinating questions, which just to get your mind thinking. I'm obviously not going to address these questions this week. We'll be talking about these questions, Bezrat Hashem, on the day after Purim, Bezrat Hashem. But listen, just a few remarkable questions. The Ksoisa asked some of these questions, the Nesivas asked some of these questions. Listen to this. Firstly, the person slaughtered your animal, right? Comes back to you, says it's not kosher. So why isn't it considered a hezek shein and ikar? That's the first question I want to throw. The Ksoris asked this question.
What type of...
The mistake is shia. You can't tell. So it's hezek shein and ikar. Hezek shein and ikar, lai shmei hezek. Right, where do you have that, for example? If I go and I'm metame your food, and you can't eat it anymore. Right? Metame metame menasta. That's a hezek shein and ikar. You don't have to pay. But the Ksoris points out, number one, hezek shein and ikar, you should be patur. That's one interesting, very interesting question to think about. I'll throw out another very interesting question. Is every time you give something to a shochet, what does he do? He makes a bracha. So he gets a schar. If I steal from you a bracha, what do I have to pay you? Ten zulum, the Gemara says. Ten zulum, but I steal schar bracha. So if that's the case, every single shochet should automatically be a shayim asacha. Why? Because he gets a schar bracha. Right? Another very fascinating question to think about. No? And the other question we should all be thinking about is, what is an Uman? How do you become an Uman? Whose obligation is it to prove that he's an Uman? And so on and so forth. And as when we go through it, we'll start to take these questions apart one by one. Right? One by one, I want to go through these questions. And you see, there's a fascinating tshuva. There's a sefer called Chikrei Leiv. He asked a very interesting question. There was a guy that was a pharmacist. And his friend went and gave him, different medication to make pills out of them. So, in the middle of doing the job, he ruined them. But he was doing it L'Shem Mitzvah, L'Shem, Chesed. So he wants to know, since he was doing it L'Shem Mitzvah, did it come to an Ovid B'Tzchar, because he was getting the Tzchar in order to enjoy the Mitzvah. And there's another question which I want to ask you. It was, as we go through these subjects here, if the halacha is that if I'm matame your food, and I come afterwards, and I tell you I was matame your food, don't eat it, I don't have to pay you. Besides Hezek Shein and Ikar, there's another reason. What's the other reason? Because Chazal wanted that you should share the information with me. Why should you share the information with me? Because if you don't share the information with me, so I'm going to end up being something not kosher, or something tamei, or tigel, whatever the case is. So Chazal said, rather share it, and the guy should be patur, in order that the person should share it. Now the shochet goes into the shechita, and what happens? The shia. Huh? Don't say anything. Sometimes you don't say anything, we're in trouble. The guy's going to do a terrible, terrible aveira. So what I'm asking you a question is, let's start with discussing this question. Why shouldn't we say that every shochet is patur? Why? Because he shouldn't have the etzahara to do what? Not to share the information with the Bible. Why is it different than the case of matana, madana, manas? That's the question. Who can think of an interesting answer to this question?
Well, in the case of Umban, he doesn't want to ruin his reputation.
Hmm?
he doesn't want his room to retract.
Which case?
If this guy is in the shachet, he doesn't want to, he doesn't want people to find out that he's he was ma'avi that he found the tachet.
Okay, so therefore.
Therefore, we're not worried about that.
Because he's an omen.
It's an accident that happened not because he was
he's not in the business, you're saying. He's not in the business. Okay, that's an interesting possibility.
Yeah.
I mean, how do people know in the first place?
I
want to throw out a totally new possibility. I want to throw out a totally new possibility. And Bezrat Hashem, next week I'll deal with those questions that I mentioned. It's a fascinating subject, you know. By the time you answer all these questions, but let me tell you a possible suggestion. The Ohr Zeruah writes that when a person does a shechita and then he tells you it's kosher, what is he doing for you? You know what he's doing for you? When he tells you it's kosher, what is he doing?
It's an edus.
Why is it edus? Let's think about it. He has the nemonis to say what he's saying. Why does he have the nemonis to say what he's saying? Because they don't have envy soon. So what happens? He's edus. Alright? Now, when I go, on the other hand, what do? I go and I'm metame your food. And now I come and I tell you about it. What am I doing? Nothing, there's no edus involved at all. At all. It's just, if I don't tell you, you're going to be in trouble. I don't have to tell you. So therefore, when we have a situation where a person has an obligation to say edus, and the truth is, even if he doesn't come afterwards and say the edus, by definition, by implication, he's saying edus every time he tells you kosher or not kosher.
Why is that the one that says?
What's that?
Why is he dealt?
I don't have to say edus. I drove accidentally and I'm tummy and I pass by your food and I touch it. So I have an obligation to go and say edus to you?
Yeah,
well, when you finish your shechita and I turn to you and I say kosher or not kosher, and you give say, oh, I moved my hand, it was shia, it was not shia, kosher or not, whatever you're going to tell me is going to be edus.
Right.
I have to say something.
You have to say either kosher or not kosher.
When it comes to the halakha of Eid Echad Nenu B'Surin, we never find that an Eid Echad Nenu B'Surin is not trusted when he's in the game. Because if we did, then you can't trust the person who sold you any food. You can't eat by anybody, right? You can't trust your wife, because there's negeya. So it's beautiful. Listen to the pshat. When it comes to Eid Echad Nenu B'Surin, that Eidus, everybody has an amonis. So therefore, we have to remove the concept and say, oh, he's a negeya, because if he tells us, then he's going to get hurt, he's going to have to pay, because that, by definition, is an edus. That's a mere edus. Masha'en came when I went accidentally and I did something to your food, where there was no obligation for edus, then you don't say this.
Arvis
doesn't give you an obligation of edus. So for Arvis, we say, listen, I have a choice in Arvis. I either can go and share the information with you, but at the same time, when I share the information, I'm going to get a lawsuit slapped on me. I don't know how far the Arvis is going to go. So Chazal said, okay, so don't pay. Don't pay, rather tell the person. But by edus, we never found that Chazal had to tell you by the type of edus, which the edus was edus and then edus soon, you never found it. Now, let me just tell you why this discussion is so fascinating.
The key is only because you didn't have to tell. You didn't have to say, unlike an Oman,
edus. You can say a combination of what you said and what I said, but I want to tell you why it's very interesting, and I'm not going to talk about this because we only have 1 minute left. But why it's fascinating is because now we're going to have one question when you shechted the animal. You have suddenly two questions. You're going to have, is it kosher or not kosher, which is a, is it a head to take a question, and who pays who, which is a Hashem Mishpat question. And there you need how many Adam? Two. And there, how much Chayel Varaya. Suddenly now, when we're going to start to make things more complicated, you're going to have in the same question where you're going to approach from a Yerideya angle or from a Chayel Mishpat angle. It's going to become a very interesting question. So I'm happy you brought out this concept of edus with Dovah Shabbat Erva, because you'll have one question that will branch in two very different directions. And Bezat Hashem, that will see Bezat Hashem by the next year. One thing, when is